Welcome, everyone, to another Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. The season's college baseball podcast is being sponsored by Project Lomo, an innovative program designed to encourage young baseball fans around the country to channel their passion for the sport into creating ways to improve their community. If you know any young baseball fans who might be great social entrepreneurs, give them a heads up about Project Lomo. Details will be announced early in May, and we want to thank the people at Project Lomo, which, of course, is short for Logan Morrison. So that's a little hint about the future of this, about our podcast sponsor. So details coming in early May, and we want to, again, thank those guys for the sponsorship. And Aaron, you're on the road, so we're going to keep this one tight this week on the podcast. But you're on the road at beautiful Fayetteville, Arkansas. Your wife's from Fayetteville. I'm from Fayetteville. Of course, we're from Fayetteville, North Carolina. So Fayetteville, near and dear to both our hearts, but a little bit different atmosphere in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I don't think Methodist University brings the Division III atmosphere quite the same way that the Arkansas Razorbacks do at Baum Stadium. And it just sounds like you were on hand for a heck of an SEC series with LSU and Arkansas.
How about my mother-in-law's alma mater, Methodist, getting the shout-out on the Baseball American College podcast? That's Upset City right there.
Who knew?
Yeah, it was awesome this weekend. I mean, it was really fantastic. You know, the atmosphere, especially Saturday and Sunday, was really good. Friday was a little quiet. I felt like the fans seemed a little anxious, you know, and LSU, you know, was clearly the better team on Friday. And then, you know, I felt like Arkansas responded pretty well on Saturday and even Sunday. I mean, that game went to extra innings, and it was Sunday felt like a prize fight. You know, I mean, to have 9,200 fans in there for a Sunday game, you know, it was really a cool atmosphere. Like I said, and you know, the two good teams going back and forth, and you know, it was funny. Dave Van Horn goes to the bullpen in what, the third or fourth inning, when Randall Fant wasn't doing too bad. I think it was the third inning. And I thought, well, it seems a little early, but you know, they are fresh in the bullpen, and then they roll out arm after arm after arm after arm. I'm thinking, my God, you know, no wonder he went to the bullpen. I mean, it's crazy how deep Arkansas is on the mound. I mean, you got, you know, you got guys like Chris Oliver going out there, and he's a middle guy. He's a nice middle guy, but you know, he's 94 to 97 with an 85-86 slider, you know, and he's going to be a stud. I mean,
he already is a stud.
He already is a stud. You got, you know, Brandon Moore, the sinker ball guy, eating up innings out there. You got Trent Daniel, firm, you know, lefty with a good slider. You got Jalen Beeks, another firm lefty with a good slider. You got Suggs finally coming out there. He came in the 10th after they were already down a run, you know, he actually gave up another run. Bregman and Ryan both squared him up pretty good on his fastball, but he was 92 to 98 with a flash and a plus slider. I mean, it was really impressive. But the thing that stood out to me was, and I'm going to write about this in Three Strikes a little bit, but LSU matched him. I mean, it wasn't the same kind of arm strength all the way through, but I mean, Nick Rumbelow was up to 94. Joey Bourgeois was good up to 91. You know, Brett Bonvaline did a nice job, and then Chris Cotton was Chris Cotton, and just unbelievable. I mean, the guy has been untouchable this season, and you know, he's 84 to 88 and got a good changeup and, you know, a little curveball rolls in there, and he just gobbles hitters up, and you know, he works two scoreless innings, and that's that. It's just lights out.
Aaron, and the other point that you made on Friday's game, which I think is worth repeating, and you, of course, you wrote about all this at baseballamerica.com, the newly redesigned baseballamerica.com, but you wrote about just how good LSU's defense is. And I mean, it feels like we usually are writing about defense, and like if a team is in that 975 range, they're a really good defensive team. And if they're around 980, then they're elite. And this team's fielding percentage is 984. And it feels like it's not because they just make the plays on the routine balls. It feels like they make all the routine plays and some spectacular ones too. And that might be a difference maker for LSU when you're comparing them to other elite teams, Vanderbilt, North Carolina, Oregon State, the other teams at the top of our rankings, Cal State Fullerton. I mean, I think you've seen all those teams in person, if not all of them. Obviously, you've seen them on TV. As Art, who calls our office, would say, you've seen films.
Right.
Is LSU the best defensive team in the country?
I think they are. And all those teams are pretty good defensively. But, you know, as Paul Maneri said it, and if you look back at Friday's post, you know, he is not shy about it. He's not backing away. He says, this is the best defensive team he's ever seen in college baseball. Not that he's ever coached, but ever seen. And he says that they have a standout defender at every single position, and he's right. I mean, between the All-American guys, Ty Ross behind the plate and Jacoby Jones second base are standouts. Mason Katz is a really good first baseman. Christian Ibarra is a really good third baseman. They've got incredible speed in the outfield. I mean, Andrew Stevenson's out there making great plays, and Mark Laird covers a ton of ground, and Rimes has become a very good left fielder. And then, of course, the key to the whole deal is Alex Bregman at shortstop. I mean, my goodness, John, my goodness. It's the same kind of, I get the same impression from him that I got from Trey Turner as a freshman. It's just the wow factor. He's unreal. I mean, he squared up, I think, just about every ball this week. Even his outs, he would go the other way hard, or he would line out to left field hard. And then on Sunday, he gets three hits. He rips a home run. I mean, just a laser over the wall in left field. I mean, it was really out in a hurry. And then all weekend long, the guy played shortstop like a big leaguer, John, a big leaguer. And that's what he looked like. He's making plays on the run look easy. He's making bare hand scoops on funky spin and perfect accurate throws. And I mean, going in the hole, he's going up the middle. I mean, it was really impressive.
They sound good. They look good on paper. They sound good, and it sounds like they were quite good in person, and all that. And they don't sweep the series. I think that says a lot about Arkansas and how good the Razorbacks are. I mean, LSU has more walks and strikeouts as a team this year. It's a pretty impressive ball club. And that said, the Tigers are third ranked. They're 34-3, and they're 13-12 in the conference. They've kind of got a stranglehold on the West Division of the SEC. But Vanderbilt, 14-1 over on the league. They've won 14 straight games. North Carolina's win streak right now is what, 9?
I think so.
So, I mean, like the teams ahead of LSU in the rankings. North Carolina's preseason 1. Vanderbilt was preseason 2. LSU was preseason number 10. So the Tigers have definitely, they've moved up pretty far up to number 3. But the only time that we haven't had North Carolina or Vanderbilt 1 and 2 back-to-back the whole year was the one weekend where Vanderbilt had a little hiccup and went 2-2. Had lost a midweek, I believe, to Middle Tennessee. And then Oregon State was really hot. So Oregon State had been up the tube. Now Fullerton 4, Oregon State 5. I mean, get used to it, guys. I mean, these top three teams don't seem like they're falling back anytime soon. We'll see if North Carolina has any kind of hiccup with Sky Bolt, their dynamic freshman right fielder breaking a foot, fouled a ball off his foot this weekend. So he's going to be out for a while. But, North Carolina, Vanderbilt, and LSU, Aaron, I mean, just none of those teams has shown any weakness this year. And then I wouldn't say Fullerton and Oregon State have shown any weaknesses either.
That's true. I feel like – I think we talked about it last week, either on air or off. But to me, those five teams are the best teams in the country. And you can put Virginia in there. I think you and I both still have a little more reservation about Virginia than those other five teams, but they're obviously really good, and they've had a great season. And this weekend they held their own down there at Georgia Tech. They lost 2 out of 3, but the Sunday game was rain shortened, and there's obviously nothing to worry about with Virginia. There's no shame in losing that road series to a good Georgia Tech team that needed that series.
Absolutely, I do think, but it's very odd, I guess, to see that the top of the SEC is so stratified. Vanderbilt with a 6-game lead in the SEC.
Jeez,
that's where I meant to go, and I went on the wrong tangent. But Vanderbilt with a 6-game lead in the SEC East over South Carolina and Florida. LSU with a 4-game lead over Arkansas in the SEC West. Let's hit on a couple other SEC things before we move on to talk some Big 12 and Big East. Vanderbilt with that 6-game lead. How about Florida catching South Carolina for second place in that division? Not that really matters, but sweeping South Carolina does matter. Obviously, it's kind of almost like with the Gators. Like, you got to wonder if Nolan Fontana and Mike Zanino and these guys are looking back and going, like, now? Really? Now? You guys go and sweep South Carolina now? But maybe it's Paco Rodriguez is the one talking with fellow big leaguer Michael Roth. Maybe those guys are hanging out in the Southland. They're in Southern California. Since they're both big leaguers now, Michael Roth called up by the Angels, gets a win in his first major league outing. Paco Rodriguez in the bullpen. There's your first two guys from the 2012 draft to reach the major leagues, Aaron. And Paco Rodriguez, that's no surprise, but I'm sidetracking you here, obviously, a little bit with Michael Roth. But, I mean, I don't associate any reporter more with Michael Roth. I mean, you didn't cover as many games as some of the people down in Columbia did, but you were there for all his heroics in Omaha for 3 years. You profiled him last year in our Roth Stars college preview issue feature. Talk a little bit about Michael Roth getting to the big leagues, and then we'll segue into this series. But yeah. I think for college baseball fans, people who listen to this podcast, I think it's pretty cool that Michael Roth is already in the major leagues.
It was fun to see the way Twitter was abuzz Saturday night when he goes in there. Not only is he in the big leagues, you know, but he works two perfect innings and strikes out four guys in his debut, picks up the win. I mean, how cool is that? You know, this guy's got one start above rookie ball. That's it. He was a ninth round pick as a senior. You know, everybody, nobody had huge expectations for this guy in pro ball. I mean, I thought, you know, and I think you agreed with me that he was going to be a big leaguer.
Right.
I mean, nobody thought it would happen this quickly. But I mean, you know, I'm not surprised he's in the big leagues getting hitters out, because that's what he does. He gets hitters out. I mean, you know, and these guys out there, you know, that want to bag on his stuff and say he's just a little deception guy, whatever. Wear it, man. I mean, yeah, I know it's a small sample size, but he's in the big leagues, and I think he's going to stick around for a long time because he's a winner. And you know, his pitchability and that little deception he's got, deception is a good thing to have, even in the big leagues. I mean, that's
exactly
an asset.
Right. That's exactly right.
And just the pitchability, you know, I mean, it's to me, it's Jamie Moyer pitchability with more velocity.
And, you know, nobody – there's a million ways to get people out in the major leagues. There are a million ways. There are preferred ways. The preferred method is the Steven Strasburg method or the David Price method. But not everybody has those gifts, you know? And not everybody, when they're given those gifts, works as hard as David Price and Steven Strasburg do, or Justin Verlander. So Michael Roth doesn't have those gifts, but he clearly works extremely hard on what he does have. He has pitchability. He has deception. He clearly has, I think, knowledge. I think he reads swings. I mean, he does all the things that you need to do when you throw as hard as he does, or not hard. And, I mean, he varies his arm angles. He has all the intangibles. And when you say that, you sell the tangibles a little bit short, because I just think that changeup is a plus-plus pitch.
Yes.
And the varying of arm angles, I think, is an asset for him. So that guy just knows what he's doing. And, you know, I don't think it's a surprise that it's polished cut left-handers who are the first two guys who – zoom right through the from the 2012 draft to the big leagues. But I think it's very cool. I think those two guys probably faced off in a lot of times in college over the last 3 years. And 3 years ago, they were very similar roles. And I feel like if Paco Rodriguez had been given a starter's role at the University of Florida, he might have been pretty similar to Michael Roth. But instead, he was as good a relief pitcher as there was in college baseball for the last, especially the last 2 years. So kudos to both guys. Their alma maters face off this weekend, Aaron. What happened? What's going on with the Gamecocks? They did not score a lot of runs this weekend. It wasn't like Jonathan Crawford went out and shoved it, because Jonathan Crawford's still kind of feeling around for his best stuff. But how much of this is kudos to Kevin O'Sullivan for figuring out that young pitching staff down at down in Gainesville and really getting the most out of their ability? And how much of it is South Carolina's lineup just kind of struggling to find its way, minus Christian Walker this year?
I think it's certainly a combination of both of those things. I mean, you hit it pretty well. You know, I think you do have to give Florida some credit for the way they've battled here. I mean, this has been a grind for Florida. They finally got above 500 overall this weekend. But, you know, Jonathan Crawford seems to be rounding into shape a little bit. This was his second win this weekend. You know, second, I think, in the last three weeks. And then, you know, their bullpen kind of has kind of, you know, carried them after that. You know, I mean, they started Danny Young in the second game of that series, and he got him into the fifth inning, which is probably about what they hoped he would do. And then they turned over the bullpen, and the bullpen took it from there. And you know, then on Sunday, it's Schaefer and Gibson out of the bullpen, and, you know, handhold, and you know, they started Carmichael. He didn't go very deep. That was probably one that didn't go according to plan. He only got into the second inning, and they you know, and the bullpen bailed him out. So, and then of course the offense really bailed him out with that 10 run inning. And I watched some of that game on TV right in time for that rally, and you could just start to see it spiral out of control for the Gamecocks. You know, it was you know, they had the bases loaded, nobody out, and one thing happens, nothing happens, and you had the feeling that it was going to go badly, which is the opposite of how we felt with North, South Carolina over the last 3 years. It's like, oh, they're going to find a way to get out of this. You know, I mean, it's kind of weird. They don't quite have that mojo right now.
They don't. And I think the thing is, you look at their lineup and you'd come into this year, Aaron, and you would think, okay, the guys are going to really take over the ownership of this team. And you had Dantzler in the middle, and he's kind of been as advertised. I mean,
yes,
you know, but then you kind of thought those sophomores, Griner, Pancake, and English, would take that step forward. And Griner, I think, has to an extent. But English and Pancake are good players, but they're not college baseball stars yet. And that's what South Carolina seemed like it was developing. And that's what Christian Walker was, what Jackie Bradley was, certainly what Michael Roth was, certainly what Matt Price was. They don't seem like they have that college star yet. I mean, do you, what do you attribute that to? Or are we just holding these guys to an impossible standard?
You know, I don't know. I think Pancake and Griner in particular have the ability to be that kind of star caliber player, and Max Schrock as well. Let's not forget that Max Schrock was out this weekend with that concussion.
He did homer on Sunday, so he came back. But still, he has been battling that, no doubt. I mean, I didn't want to put it on him because he's a freshman. To be in that caliber, that's why I singled out those sophomores. But he's had some injuries, and he is a freshman, so I don't quite hold him to that same standard as I hold the other guys.
Yeah. And, you know, he actually played Friday, too, in the middle game of that series. So I take it back. He was not out this weekend, just the first game. But anyway, I mean, those three guys, I think, do have frontline star potential. And you're right. It seems like Griner has heated up after a slow start. He's above 300. But Pancake and English, too, I mean, all these guys have impact tools. And I do think Pancake, he's shown flashes of it, John. He's got some home runs, and he'll make some brilliant plays sometimes at shortstop, but he still makes errors. And it just hasn't all come together for him the way they really need it to. They need him and Griner and English, that core of kind of high-profile sophomores. Those guys need to be the guys that carry this offense, in my opinion. And obviously, Dantzler. I mean, Dantzler's your senior guy in the middle. He's going to be a run producer. But those other guys need to be better. That's it.
I agree. And I think the other thing has been, outside of Nolan Belcher, the injury to Montgomery has kind of upset their weekend rotation. We've talked a little bit about that. But they haven't found a consistent other answer. And Colby Holmes, a senior, Colby Holmes right now, sir, you are no Sam Dyson. You are no who was the guy in 2010?
He's no Colby Holmes circa 2011 or 2012. I mean,
there you
he's
go.
Just
that's
what they need him to be, is just that solid, you know, back end rotation kind of stock right hander. And he hasn't been.
Throw strikes. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Couple more SEC notes, Aaron, because we could go all day on the SEC, but I just want to hit on, we really debated at 16-17, Mississippi State versus Kentucky. I feel like we've been Bulldog apologists all year, mostly me, I think.
I think both of us have. I was a little defiant at one point about the Bulldogs.
You were. Fuck it, they're going to Omaha.
That's right.
I was trying to protect you there, but I appreciate you throwing yourself on the mercy of the court.
Well, I'm not backing down from it. They're going to Omaha, Johnny.
But big sweep for the Bulldogs. And we're just—I guess the main thing is we're just happy to see John Cohen take our advice. Luis Pollo Reyna goes in the weekend rotation, and they've been a little bit more competitive since that happened. So,
yeah.
Coach Cohen, just call whenever you need more advice, I guess, right? But what's changed? Is it just the schedule for Arkansas, for Mississippi State, or what's changed with their team? Ending that losing streak of series and winning the last two against the Gators, and then sweeping at A&M.
I think you hit on the big thing is Pollo Reyna, but also now they got Lindgren back on Sunday. So it feels like finally there's some stability in this rotation with Pollo Reyna, Graveman, and Lindgren. And, you know, Louie, as much as I love Louie, I'd rather see him on Sunday than Friday, you know, in theory. I mean, you'd like to have a guy with more ability to dominate as your Friday starter. A guy like Lindgren or even Graveman. I mean, Graveman has thrown three straight complete games now, and he's pretty good. I mean, with that sinker and that changeup he's got, I mean, he's a good pitcher.
He is.
He's not, you know, that same level as like a Zomek or a Nola or a, you know, a, he's not quite Barrett Aston either. I mean, he's right. but he's good. And you know, I'd be comfortable with him as my Friday guy. But right now, the way they've got it structured is working, so I imagine they'll stick with it. But you know, that was the big thing they needed to me was the stability in the rotation, and they're getting it. And you know, it seems like Jonathan Holder has become Jonathan Holder again. For a while there, he was surprisingly mortal. But you know, the guy was so good all last year. I mean, what did he finish with?
0.90 ERA or something like that.
I think it was even less than that, but it was tiny. And then, you know, he started off this year similarly and then had a little bit of a rocky patch. But this weekend he was very good in two appearances. And, you know, that's, I think, a key for them as well. And, of course, all the guys in the middle, I think they can trust. So, I don't know. And they're hitting. And I think they got momentum right now. And that's why we moved them ahead of Kentucky. Even though Kentucky won the head-to-head series 2 out of 3, it was in Lexington. Even though Kentucky's only lost 2 series, Mississippi State has lost 4. Suddenly you look up and the Bulldogs have the better SEC record by a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, they just feel like they're playing better. So it probably does look a little weird to have the Bulldogs ahead of the Wildcats. But there you go.
Aaron, last question on the SEC. Who's your we're a little bit past midseason, but now, but who's your Southeastern Conference Player of the Year? I would throw out these nominees. Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah.
With a 1359 OPS and 13 home runs, 42 RBIs. Mason Katz with his 422, 500, 800 slash line, but still a lower OPS at 1300 than Hunter Renfrow. 13 home runs like Hunter, but 60 RBI, so 18 more ribeyes than Hunter Renfrow. Alex Bregman.
Yes.
432, 472, 652. And playing tremendous defense at shortstop, or someone that I have not mentioned. Where are you headed that way? I think you know where my vote is.
Yeah, you're going with Renfrow. And
sentiment takes me to Hunter Renfrow and the fact that he doesn't have a Robin to his Batman like a Mason Katz does. He's shouldering – I'm not taking anything away from Wes Ray or C.T. Bradford or Adam Frazier.
Alex Detz, who's been pretty good as well.
Detz has been good, but – the next high guy in home runs on that team is 3, and the next guy's 2. Yeah. He's out-hitting Adam Frazier by a lot. Hunter Renfrow is carrying the Mississippi State Bulldogs. And, I mean, his slugging percentage is higher than – it's almost higher than – his OPS this year is higher than his OPS from his first 2 years combined. Having an unbelievable breakout season. It's unbelievable unless you've been listening to me the last couple.
That's
of years.
Right. It's true. So. It's true.
But who you got there? What's your SEC Player of the Year?
That's tough, and I think Renfrow's a fine choice. You know, Katz, the way that he's gotten so many of these RBIs in clutch situations, all the big hits he's had, the big home runs. I mean, you know, there's nothing. Nothing ticky-tack or inflated about his stats. You know, it's a tough one. And I still think, I mean, Alex Bregman has been – that's the thing is you can't quite decide between those two guys for LSU's MVP.
They're going to split the media vote, the large media vote in Louisiana, and throw the election to Hunter Renfrow.
I think that could happen. And I think you're probably right as well that I lean toward Renfrow for that reason. It feels like there's more of a supporting cast at LSU. And Rhymes in between those two guys in the lineup. You know, let's not forget about him.
Let's not forget about the guy who almost hit 500 last year.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's been quietly, you know, kind of doing his thing this year. And everybody else in the lineup, I mean, they've been a better offensive team overall. So I guess you're right. I think Renfrow has shouldered the load a little bit more. I mean, he's an animal.
It was a loaded question. I mean, let's face it.
It's a loaded question.
Fitzy, a couple other things, and we'll let you go. We're going to touch on the Big 12 and the Big East. So if you're not big, get out of the podcast. But Aaron, the Big 12, we've touched on it a couple times how down this league is, but Hoochie Mama, Oklahoma takes a series loss this weekend, but I guess the news in the in the Big 12 is Oklahoma still looks like the best team, but here comes Baylor, who looked awful when you saw them early, and look out for the Sunflower State. Here comes Kansas and KU, both of which are just grinding their way through to possible regional bids.
They are, and it's...
Not bids, berths. I should say regional berths. I apologize.
You know, I mean, this is, I don't know, this league's a mess. I still know what to make of this league, But you're right. I mean, Baylor has momentum right now, which is I didn't see coming. I thought they were very mediocre. I saw them multiple weekends, the first couple of weekends, and they just didn't do anything for me. But here they come. This was a big series win against Oklahoma. There are two guys that I liked in their lineup when I saw them in person.
Orff.
One was Nathan Orff, and the other was Cal Tuohy, who I just felt like, he's the one kind of real physical guy that they have in the middle that scares you. And Tuohy was the hero this weekend. He had the walk-off hit on Friday. He had the big game-winning grand slam on Sunday. That was a neat show, a neat display there. But they do have some kind of college arms that are pretty solid that can keep them in games. And they still have a lot of work to do, I think, to be in a regional. I mean, they're 19-17 overall. They're outside the top 60 in the RPI. The Kansas teams are both in the 50s, so they're moving on up a little bit here. I mean, Kansas to me has the more impressive resume, even though Kansas State has the better record.
I'm with you.
The fact that Kansas has now taken back-to-back series against Texas and Oklahoma State, neither of those teams are great, but they're not. Those are quality series wins. I mean, we wrote about both those teams in weekend preview a couple weeks ago, and they had been doing some things well at various points this season. Texas, not so much lately, but they also have a series win at TCU. Kansas does. So those are three series wins against teams that we thought would be factors here in this league. And all three of those teams now are find themselves kind of behind the eight ball, but TCU even now, I'm not going to, don't get carried away here because they probably need to win the league to get in with an RPI in the hundreds. But TCU did win a series this weekend quietly. against Oklahoma State.
You know how quietly, Aaron? You know how quietly they won that series? They scored six runs. That's how quietly.
That's how they do things.
Don't tell anybody.
That's how they do things at Fort Worth.
It's unbelievable.
That's how they roll.
I hope the games are at least quick and painless.
Right, yeah, seriously. But I don't know. I mean, at this point, boy, I don't know. Am I supposed to do a stock report tomorrow? I don't even know. But I don't know what
the
heck.
I think you are. I think stock reports coming. But the Big 12, I do think it's going to be a 3 or 4 bid league. Is there any way it's more than four? I mean, the RPI for these teams is all in the 50s and north. Outside of Oklahoma, I mean, I guess Texas is at 46, but I mean, you got to win some games to maintain an RPI there, and the Longhorns are not winning games, and they score almost at a TCU-like level.
Yeah, it's a concern. They just have not gotten it going, and one thing to consider here is we still have these holes in the schedule. Now, Oklahoma, for instance, this weekend coming up, is it this weekend? They're playing some bad RPI team. New Orleans,
dun,
263,
dun, dun, dun.
263 in the RPI. That's not going to help your national seed ambitions, certainly, or even your hosting ambitions. They're probably better off that series just got rained out.
yeah, you're right.
But that's a factor here. Is that Big 12 schedule thing that kind of drags down the league. RPI killed them, I think it was last year. Here's Kansas State.
The top eight national seed, basically, right?
Yeah, and here's Kansas State with Niagara.
Natural rivals there, I think.
I'm sorry, they played Niagara earlier this season. But, I mean, that's a team around 200 in the RPI, and Eastern Michigan's around 200 in the RPI. I mean, that's going to probably drag them down a little bit.
Kansas has a lot of non-Division One games on its schedule. I mean, I know that you get a few of those in your schedule for the RPI, but they've played Missouri Valley, Ottawa of Kansas, Baker, and they finished the season at Utah. I mean, I don't know where Utah is in the RPI, and I know they're in the Pac-12, but it's not going to be great for their RPI. So, I mean, if you're a Big 12 team and you put yourself on the bubble, and if you're on the bubble, these scheduling things come back to haunt you. Whether you're going to host a regional or not, or be a top eight national seed, or just get into the tournament. I also feel like the next 2 weeks, Aaron, will really tell us a lot, because you got Baylor playing, I guess, against Texas and TCU the next 2 weeks. So we'll really find out a little bit more about Baylor. They're at TCU and then home against Texas. If they win both those series, and they still are at Kansas and then at Texas Tech, that's basically TCU, Texas, and Texas Tech. Those are the bottom three teams in the league as of right now. If Baylor wins those three series, and can hold serve at Kansas, feels like Baylor should be able to, you know, make its way into a regional bid. And they're going to have to. The other thing I will say for Baylor is a lot of their remaining schedule is on the road. Their remaining midweek games, three of the four are on the road. I'm not sure I'd do this, but I should do this more often. A little hat tip to the folks over at D1Baseball.com for all the – I mean, we use their schedules a lot, on the podcast especially. So a hat tip to those guys that make this a little bit easier. But they're at Texas State, at Dallas Baptist, at Arlington. Those are winnable games, but you're going to have to win on the road if you're Baylor to make this late season run. So they've got that momentum. They're at 62 in the BoydsWorld.com RPI. Let's see if they can finish this off. I kind of like their chances. I like teams that improve as the year goes on, Aaron. I think that's the biggest thing that stands out to me about Baylor, that and the fact that, you know, you called it earlier in the year on Nathan Orff. I think I like to make fun of his name because his name is Nathan Orff, and it's a fun name. That guy can hit, and he's been hitting all year. He's hitting .421 right now, and he's really something. Like, he's been a catalyst for them pretty consistently this year.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure if I'm with you on them making this thing happen. I mean,
okay,
we'll see. You know, I just think that, like you said, three of those series are on the road, and then Texas. I don't know. We'll see.
Talent-wise, they certainly don't overwhelm any of those teams, even if they're 7-4 in the league, and say Texas Tech is 4-8. I mean, they have a little bit more talent than maybe than Texas Tech does, but it's not like a. It's not like it's a where you say you look at Oklahoma on the field with those teams and say, okay, Oklahoma's the better team, right?
Right, exactly.
Aaron, let's wrap up with the Big East, and we have a mess in the Big East Conference because Notre Dame, which got off to a great start against a difficult schedule, has all of a sudden turned back into a pumpkin. Five straight losses, lost the last game of the Villanova series, lost midweek to Michigan, which, side note, for Jeff Singer and the other Michigan fans out there, Michigan is rolling. I think the Wolverines have won nine straight games.
Yeah, we got them. Got a note on them coming up for three strikes today.
Outstanding. So Eric Backich getting it done. Hey, they swept mighty Michigan State last weekend.
That's right.
Which, of course, swept your beloved Hoosiers this year.
That's right.
Or Hoosers, however you want to
spell it. Hoosers.
So John Manuel Spelling Academy. But Notre Dame gets swept at Pittsburgh, and you wrote about Pitt earlier this year. I know they like to be called Pittsburgh, but I'm calling them Pitt. But you wrote about the Panthers earlier in the year when they went to Wichita State, swept them to start the year. So we know Pittsburgh's pretty good, but this is a disturbing series sweep because now they've been swept twice in the conference. So at 4-8, and then talk about not having a lot of wiggle room RPI-wise, here comes Quinnipiac. And unfortunately for Notre Dame, that's not a hockey series. Quinnipiac was just runner-up in the hockey Frozen Four to Yale, all about the Nutmeg State this week in the Frozen Four. But they still got UConn and South Florida at home, then at St. John's and at Cincinnati. Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish are in trouble here, aren't they, Aaron?
Here's the good thing, is they're still 26 in the RPI, according to Warren Nolan.
Yeah, it's world as well.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that gives them some breathing room. If they can get back to a respectable spot in conference. One thing that we learned last year from Michigan State getting an at-large bid is that you don't have to finish near the top of your conference, even in a mid-major, to get a bid if you have a good RPI. And, you know, I mean, you know, they need to, you know, they need to be better than 4-8. this is not where you want to be in the conference at this point in the season. But I feel like, you know, with those home series against UConn and South Florida, they should win those series. And you know, St. John's has not been great this year. They're obviously down from last year. It's a winnable road series, and certainly Cincinnati's a winnable series. So, you know, they can certainly, in my opinion, win all the remaining series and still get into regionals, or even win three out of these four conference series and be all right. But that said, I don't feel great about them right now. I mean, they're pitching to me, you know, with I don't know, their pitching feels less certain than it did earlier this season, and you know, it's nice that they've gotten Pat Connaughton back from basketball, but he hasn't really, you know, he hasn't really blossomed yet. He's still kind of going for, you know, into the fifth inning maybe, but not really.
Right.
He's not quite what you want yet from your Friday guy, which is how they're using him. And you know, I don't know. The bats have gone quiet. You know, we like this team's offense quite a bit earlier this season, and they're not scoring runs right now at all. So, you know, maybe it's just one of those funks the teams go through. I mean, we saw other teams go through funks this year, Florida, you know, to a lesser degree, Mississippi State, you know, and those teams have recovered. So Notre Dame, I still think, is good enough to recover, but I'm a little less certain right now than I had been about them.
I'm with you. And it really did feel like the difference maker for them was that physical middle of the lineup in Jagielo and Mancini was kind of a separator for them. And, they scored five runs all weekend. You know, Jagielo, had a two-run homer in one of the games. And otherwise, they just really didn't do a whole lot offensively. So yeah. The rest of that team kind of needs to, help out those guys in the middle. Is that a two-bid league, a three-bid league? How do you see that Big East shaping up, Aaron? I mean, South Florida probably didn't help its RPI a whole lot this weekend by sweeping Alcorn State.
Yeah.
Pitts, they're at 136. Pittsburgh just got swept last week by South Florida, so we've got some issues there. Although Pittsburgh's in the top 60 in the RPI. Two-bid league, three-bid league, what are you feeling right now for the Big East?
How about Seton Hall sneaking up a little bit here? They're 36 in the RPI. I remember they started.
They've played a really good schedule.
They did, and they started 0-0.
0-0 a lot.
A lot, yeah.
I think it was 0-9.
I want to say 0-9, and that's right. But
they swept Pepperdine. They were 0-9, right. And they went and swept Pepperdine.
And they had played North Carolina early in the season, of course. And John Pruszynski, who pitches well every week of his career.
Yeah.
He only lost 1-0 in that opener. And you're right. They swept Pepperdine.
Got a big RPI boost by sweeping by winning a series against Rutgers. Sorry. That wasn't supposed to be so funny, but it was.
Well,
they're number 52 in the RPI.
I know they're still hanging on. They're a 500 team and they're number 51 in the RPI, but Seton Hall's 36 and they're only three games above 500, but the fact is they played a really good schedule. They went to Pepperdine, like you said, and swept them, and Pepperdine's been playing well lately. Pepperdine, I think, is in first place in the West Coast Conference.
I think so.
Now they go to Houston, Seton Hall does this weekend, and win 2 out of 3 against a team that had been, a top 25 team. I mean, I don't know that they either of us really bought into them as a true top 25 team, but they had earned their way in, at this point in the season, because we had a dearth of other worthy teams. So that's a quality series win. They have a nice series win against UConn, which has been a solid club this year. So I don't know. Keep your eye on Seton Hall. I mean, I kind of like their team. I don't love them, but they're intriguing and they got a chance. So you got some teams here that are on the in the picture. I mean, from an RPI standpoint, Louisville and Notre Dame are in very good shape from the RPI standpoint purely. Seton Hall, if you're only looking at the RPI, they're in really good shape right now. And then you've got Rutgers and Pitt also in that top 60. So those are all teams within striking range from an RPI standpoint of regional bids, and that's usually the fly in the ointment when it comes to getting bids for the Big East is the RPI. So right now, they got some teams in the mix here. I still feel like it's going to be a multi-bid league, and I think it could be three, but I still feel pretty good about at least two.
I think I'm with you, Aaron. I think I'm with you that Seton Hall is looking pretty interesting. They've got a home series against Georgetown coming up. Georgetown's RPI is in the 200s. Which is not good, but Georgetown has 120 games this year, albeit again, I guess not great schedule. But they, by Georgetown standards, has been a little bit better Georgetown team. They did win a series 2 weeks ago against South Florida, so this is going to be interesting. I'm fascinated by this Seton Hall team. Now you've brought them to my attention, and I want to say if we don't do cheers and jeers, but cheers to a guy I respect a lot, Todd Whitting. But Austin Pruitt in the one game Houston wins this weekend, 142 pitches.
Ooh.
In a complete game shutout. I mean, 9 innings, 6 hits, no walks, 12 strikeouts. That sounds pretty efficient, but 142 pitches, not hard. Well, he gets a week off, but not easy to defend 142 pitches. So college baseball coaches, help us out. So, Aaron, three strikes today. Sounds like Michigan. Sounds like a lot of more thoughts from the bomb. And on today's Google Plus Hangout, I want to talk to you about your favorite college baseball stadiums and why.
Man, that's tough.
So take
let's
a little
do
time,
it.
Take a little time to hone that for today's Google Plus Hangout. We hang out to chat college baseball face-to-face, screen-to-screen every Monday at 12:30 here on the Baseball America, on the family of networks, really, on baseballamerica.com, the podcast, the Google Plus Hangout, and, of course, on the website and in print. So, Aaron, great stuff on this week's podcast. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We want to remind you that this season's College Baseball Podcast is being sponsored by Project Lomo, an innovative program designed to encourage young baseball fans around the country to channel their passion for the sport into creating ways to improve their community. So if you know any young baseball fans who might be great social entrepreneurs, give them a heads up about Project Lomo. Details will be coming in early May for Aaron. I'm John. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.